Wilcox, and his website is robertkwilcox.com. And we are talking about his book, which is titled Japan's Secret War: How Japan's Race to Build Its Own Atomic Bomb Provided the Groundwork for North Korea's Nuclear Program. It's in its third edition, revised and updated. Okay. So,
all right. I think we left off. I was going to tell you the story of U-234, which was a submarine, a German submarine. And as the war ended for Japan, for Germany, only Japan was left to fight. So Germany, which had been back and forth with helping the Japanese on their nuclear program, but there's not much information on that. I suspect they did more than we know about right now. But anyway, they put on this submarine some uranium. Now, you know, uranium comes in various forms. The stuff that blows up in a bomb is not just raw or uranium. There's a tiny fraction, I mean atom-sized fraction, tiny, tiny bit of the uranium. It's called U-235. That's the explodable uranium. And what you do is you have to, the hard part of making an atomic bomb is taking out of regular uranium this explodable uranium. I'm using very basic terms here. It's not that easy, but and you do this with separators, and separators are huge machines which, through various methods, separate the hard uranium from the U-235, and you eventually get little pieces of it, and then bigger pieces, and it takes months to do this. Today they can do it much easier, but it's still a hard, hard process. So what was on this submarine is not clear, but there's much evidence to believe that it was highly radioactive. So it might have been U-235, the explodable uranium, or it could have been some amount of that in along the way, which still could explode. You get it together, and then your problem is you need to get two lumps of uranium, of explodable uranium, to come together fast enough that it causes a explosion. So most of the time it would fizzle out, but that's what you wanted. And so this submarine left Kiel, Germany, just at the end of the war, March or May, I forget the exact time, and had to make its way through the English Channel, which it did, and then it made it. Then it was going. It was en route to Japan, but en route, once they got out to the Atlantic, the crew, which had two Japanese on it, because they had come from Japan to marshal this thing to be there when these things were put on the submarine, they decided, wait a minute. Why are we going to Japan? Japan's going to lose too. So they decided to give up to America, and they took their cargo instead. And it was quite a wild ride, because they had to keep that quiet, because all of the Allies were looking for this submarine, and they kind of did a diversion, but finally ended up in New England. I forget the exact place where they landed. But when they landed, Oppenheimer, who headed our program, the chief scientist in our, he came
Manhattan
down there.
Project.
On the Manhattan Project, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he came down there, and so did Groves. And it was all top secret stuff. They took that away, and where it went, we don't know for sure, but some experts, and I say experts, a top dog guy involved in all of this at that time, he believes it went into the one of the bombs we dropped on Japan. You know, we were having a tough time getting enough explodable uranium to even put into bombs. When we dropped our two bombs, we didn't have a third one ready yet. And so here is a bunch of stuff that might be have been ready, right? So anyway, it was dropped in there. So that's the story of U-235 in a nutshell. And, U-234, which in itself is weird, isn't it? Explodable uranium is U-235, and the designation of this U-boat is U-234. Weird. But that's a story which lends itself to those. And I can go many, many ways now to talk about this, but I'm just a writer who looks for good stories. And when I found out about this, because I wrote, I read in the New York Times about a Spanish spy who had uncovered uncovered the fact that Japan had worked on a bomb. And to me, that was a great story. This is in the 80s, and nobody knew that Japan had worked. You know, the secrecy was so great. So this story is so squelched by the left, which only wants Japan to look like a victim. And in Japan itself, and by the way, my first two editions did not get published in Japan, but this one has. Japan finally has admitted it was true. And I was published by a big publisher, as well as here, too, but in Japan. So this was not, it's not known here. And I mean, I can't tell you the number of supposed great scholars who all come out in the New York Times and so on and say, oh, this is not true. Japan's program was no more than a gleam in their eyes. Well, first of all, they're actually admitting that they had a program. And once my first edition came out, they came out with, you know, this is so far hyped, it didn't happen. So I wrote, it so happened that a good publisher, Marlowe, picked it up for a second edition 10 years later. The first edition was 1985. The second edition was 1995. And the proof that it was not a lie, that it was that somebody, a publisher, would stake their reputation on it, was that Marlowe published in 1995. And I would have left it alone. But then again, they said, okay, they got pretty far. They did do a little work on it. They did do some spade work and so on. But they never got near making a bomb. Well, that made me mad, you know. And when I got it, when these guys called me, Defense Department, who actually work for the American government, and who said they carried my book around with them and used it because they're afraid that they haven't found all the things that were in North Korea that the Japanese had made. I said, well, I'm going to really do this right. I'm going to make it so. It's so detailed. I'm going to go back. And by the way, I went to Japan and spent 3 weeks there interviewing. I interviewed all the people in the program. And this was what these so-called scholars were saying wasn't true. It's amazing they can do something like that. But that's what they did. Well, it went from, maybe they wanted to do it, but it didn't work. Okay, maybe they got a little far. To this, and I haven't heard a word from anybody, and Japan just published it saying it was true. There's a whole group of ex-generals and so on which back it now. So when I first got onto it, I went to Japan, I interviewed all the scientists, everybody who was involved in this, all firsthand accounts, came
now
back.
They were still alive?
Oh yeah, they were all alive at this time. Not Nishina, not the head scientists. They had died, but people involved in the program, scientists themselves who were involved in the program, people who had firsthand knowledge. Not people who tell me, "Oh, I knew a guy who did it." No, these are people who were in it. Now, all they could do for me was say, "Yes, we had a program. Yes, it evolved this way. Yes, we got this far. And what the upshot of it all was that in Japan proper, they did the pilot program. Pilot program means they worked out how to do it, when to do it, what they would need, and they were in the meantime gathering uranium, other thorium, and other fissionable materials all over the Asian continent, which is one of the things they gave to North Korea. North Korea had the benefit of all of their mines. Today, they still use them. So they were doing all the pilot stuff. And then when, this is what I found out the first time when I, for my first edition, and which is now in here, but bolstered much more with more information. From Korea, for instance, I found people who said, yes, we worked on that. But you have to understand that in the Korea, they were as secret as we were, and they would break it up into the people who piled the dirt, the people who moved into this. So it's hard to do, and if you I don't think you've ever been to Korea. I haven't either. I mean, North Korea, it's hard to do. So I had to leave it by going to Japan.
Yes. The only anyway, place I've been in the Orient is China.
You've been there, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Well, I could go to China, but I just didn't have the money, so your advances only go that so far.
That's right.
Can only do so more far. So anyway, I went. One of the things that I found, first of all, this story that Japan had made an atomic bomb was the headline on a lot of big papers in 1946. And that's another thing that keyed me into this in the beginning. It was written by another CIC, you know, those guys that I talked about in the first book,
yes.
In the patent book. These guys who are sort of the FBI of intelligence, they go in and they make, one of those intelligence guys interviewed a Japanese who said he had worked on the bomb, that they had made it and had fired off a test bomb off of Korea and basically laid out much of the framework of what I would be working on for the rest of my life, I guess we're talking about here on this book. And so I started by that, and that led me to the National Archives, where I went to the National Archives, and I asked the head archivist there, great man, Taylor was his name, he's dead now, to help me. And he says, well, you know, all the stuff, and the best stuff I could get would be, you know, CIA or and it all came through the occupation. So he brought me down to this new wing, which is no longer in existence. But it was a wing where they had, all of the papers had been dumped into boxes, and nobody had gone through them. I was going to be looking at stuff that nobody had seen since the war had ended. It just hadn't been filed by the National Archives. So I was able to go through some of this. You couldn't. It was acres and acres. I could go through some. He brought me what he thought might bring me some information. And one of the things I found was something called, well, so many good things I found, but I'll start with this, A-bomb report. It turned out that after the war, we began to put two and two together. And the Japanese understandably lied through their teeth. But all of the scientists who had been working on this said now they were working on peaceful things, but they would go to their labs and find radioactivity. They would find books that logged in how they were separating uranium from, and they found the uranium. They found tons of uranium, not all of it separated. Don't misunderstand me, but tons of uranium, which, by the way, was another good thing we could do to keep secret. We started taking all of the uranium that was in Japan. So I'm finding information about this, and so is America. And I'm certainly can see some of the head people here going crazy, saying, "My God, they may have done it." That what you know, luckily, we beat them. They're not going to get it. But what did the Russians get from them? Which we know occurred. For 2 years, they kept us out of North Korea. I don't know if you remember that history. But they shot down American planes that were buzzing over Konan, where the actual bomb was made. By this time, we're looking at it. And this A-bomb report, anyway, we sent a bunch of special, what was the report they did in Germany? And they tried to find out what the Germans had done. I forget the name of it, but this is the same thing. Huh?
I'm thinking, who did they say was...
We were afraid of what the Germans had done. We didn't even know the Japanese had done anything until after the war. But right as the war ended, we sent in a special secret investigation to find out what the Germans had done, and we got a bunch of German scientists out of it.
Paperclip. You're thinking about Paperclip.
No, Paperclip is taking the German scientists back here. But the
it was a little bit weird how they did that.
We did the same thing in Japan. And I'm going to get quick to it, but they lied about what they'd done. And luckily, some in the A-bomb investigation realized it and sent a second report, and that's when we began to realize, hey, a lot happened here, and it happened in North Korea, and we don't know anything about it. So we began to try to find out stuff, and we had nobody in North Korea. We couldn't get any information. But I found in these files, which were given to me, which they never do today, but were given to me, and I'm fishing through them, I found CIA reports that are incredible. And they basically say, we are getting reports that the Japanese had a big program here in Hungnam, Korea, and throughout the Russian peninsula, and that they made a bomb, and that they fired it off, off the coast. This is where this guy first got that 1946 article. That's where it came from. And they fired it off, but the Russians came in and took it, and they spent 2 years looting the plants, took it all back to Russia. And when they finally got through with that, they said, here, North Korea, little fledgling country, you can have now the ruins. And and they got a system of electricity that you can't make this without, you can't make a bomb without the electrical grid that the Japanese had put there. They got a system of underground laboratories that North Korea today is using. So all of this came out of these top secret CIA reports that I was getting, and it even named doctors who were involved in it. The Japanese, mostly. Making a bomb after you've done the physics of it is not a real physics problem. It's an engineering problem. And if you're familiar with Japanese culture, it's a cultural thing. They had engineers over there. They did have physicists, and some of them were reported being there. But the main thing is they had engineers over there. And those engineers were taken and tortured, and I have reports about how they were, you know, tortured with fire, and guys would die rather than tell the truth. And it's an amazing story.
Okay, we're going to a break, and we do have a couple callers on the line, but we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes.
All righty, we are back. And our guest is Robert K. Wilcox. Do you want to take a couple of callers?
Sure.
Excuse me. Okay, Chance, welcome.
Yes, hello, Deanna. Hello, Mr. Wilcox. Mr. Wilcox, this is a real treat for me because George Smith Patton is a personal hero of mine. Ever since he said we fought the wrong enemy, meaning we should have been fighting Russia.
Yes.
I had relatives who lived under Russian communism before they fled to the United States. Before I get to my question, Mr. Wilcox, I have a couple of pictures of, I don't know if you remember, George Patton's faithful, devoted pet dog, that white bull terrier.
Yes, yes.
And I also remember reading, he took a white riding horse from Hitler and he gave it to Emperor Hirohito. I remember reading that. Now, here's my question. Here's my question to you, Mr. Wilcox. Now, I know George Patton had one son and two daughters who probably died by now, I would imagine. But I saw in the picture, dated 1945, when he returned home here, he had four grandchildren by his side, three boys and a girl. And I would assume they're probably in their late 70s or 80s now, if they're still alive. Would you happen to know if he has any, if they are alive, or does he have any living relatives?
Yeah, that's a good question. As I think I explained that one of his granddaughters went to Europe, and she had a discussion with someone who claimed to be a Russian agent, and who said that her grandfather had been murdered. And I had, when the book came out, there were a lot of people who wanted to have his body exhumed, and
right.
And they actually formed a group, and they went to the family, and the family said no. And the reason was, in my summation, I'm getting very a long story short, but I think they didn't want his name mired in something like this, where he was murdered, rather than his great reputation and so on. That's what I think. But anyway, and his son had a meeting with Douglas Bezzata, who is one of the key witnesses in my book, the mm-hmm. former spy and Jed Berg and the guy who says that he caused the accident. They had an actual meeting because Bezzata wanted to tell this story, and I think it was the National Enquirer was going to run something about it, and so they brought the son, and the son was very antagonistic to Bezzata. It's a good thing they didn't get in a fight, because Bezzata would have killed him. But this was a big son too. But he said, yeah. "I don't believe this. You're not telling the truth." And Bezzata kept it. Said, "Yes, I am. This is what happened. And let me tell you, my book is based on based a lot on 41 secret diaries that Bezzata kept for himself, in which he agonized over this. He agonized
right.
over it. And so I don't doubt. I met Bezzata. I've seen his diaries." This occurred. He was asked to kill him. And
now the son was.
I don't
the son
have any
was
doubt
named,
about that.
The son was named George.
Anyway,
too, wasn't?
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. The son was named George. Also, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes, and he
yeah.
became a. He was a high-ranking general.
Now I take it he passed away too, right? It must have.
I think he's gone now. I don't think there's much. You know, there certainly are. Family left, but they just didn't take to this. They didn't like it, but they never, nobody, you know, rebutted me or anything. They just didn't want to be involved. And
right.
I contacted them many
yes.
times.
They want to put the memory to rest. They should, though. They should investigate it, really. I remember you mentioned earlier in the broadcast about those two nurses. I remember in 1975, I was a teenager. I remember, was that in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wasn't it?
It
the
was.
VA hospital?
That's
yeah.
it. You got it.
Yeah, there were two Filipino nurses, young Filipino nurses, and I think after a couple of months or so, they found them innocent. I remember
what happened
that.
Was, yes, that's very true. They were found guilty, but it was overturned.
Huh. Yeah, and I think they
which is legitimate. I'm not saying it wasn't legitimate, but from what I know of what happened there, I think it was a political decision completely. And read my book and you'll see why. But my book
yeah.
is that was an early book I wrote, and it's going to be hard to find. But buy my new Japan Secret War instead.
Yeah, I think those two nurses injected people with some form of that curare that caused respiratory. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I was a teenager then. It's surprising I remember. Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilcox, for taking my call. Thank you, too, Diana, now.
Okay, thank you. All righty, we're going to a break. We'll be right back, and we'll take that other call.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Nikki, great product. Have to try it for a few months to see results. After taking Extendovite for about 6 months, I have noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from carpal tunnel. I will continue to buy the product. Ken Peaks, 5 out of 5 stars. Works as advertised. This formula is very powerful. Be careful to follow directions. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized and my lower edema has reduced. Lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. Thank you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Robert K. Wilcox. His website is robertkwilcox.com. And we do have another caller, Dr. Kelly in California. Welcome.
Oh, hey, Deanna. Thank you so much again for another stellar interview and guest. I wasn't able to get through last week, but I did want to pass a little info along to you. If I could get your P.O. box or something from the engineer, I would really appreciate it. And I would love to order your book about the Sandy Hook thing. And I've been taking in small doses of the human radiation experiments when I can handle a bit of that at a time.
Ooh,
and
what are you doing?
The human radiation experiment.
Well, I wouldn't be doing that at all.
Well, reading the book, you know, I mean, I have to know the horrible truth.
Yeah.
And I would like to see a compilation of good men and women and actually do more of a grand jury type of investigation instead of dragging everything back out into the public and trying to make a spectacle of it as they did in the human radiation experiments and some of the ancillary documents. And thank you for your work as well. And the info coming out, and just
wow. You know, one of the things that came across my path, came across my path several years ago, with radiation, there used to be lead paint. Lead paint was used on a lot of homes. It was used all over. It was just something that was used as a standard. And then somebody said, oh, no, we can't have lead paint because little children might swallow a piece of lead paint. So whenever they want to make a law, they say, oh, we've got to protect the children. And so the reason that they got rid of lead paint is so that they could radiate people through their house walls. And anyway, that was just something. But I don't know. I wouldn't participate in any radiation activities.
No, I mean, I'm just reading the book to get the knowledge, wisdom from, you know, the horrible thing, and, you know, taking in a small chapter here and there, or just a couple of pages, because it's so horrible that I can only, you know, take it in small doses. But you know, it's interesting covering the TBI, the total body irradiation, and those plutonium injections and all of this.
Oh my gosh.
Madness. You know, just brutality and madness. And we're not buying the falsely so-called science anymore. And thank you for pointing things out, and all your stellar work. I mean, it's amazing that you, you know, that you're able to do this. And so thank you so much again.
Oh, well, you're certainly welcome. Thank you for your phone call. Okay. Let's take Pat real quick in Fort Worth. Pat?
Hi, a couple of things. I really think that we should work with these insurance companies that people have to have for the 20% of their Social Security to try to get them to give us one autopsy of our choice, or the people who left when we die, their choice. Or put it somehow, you know, and the VA too, because, I mean, you know, it's too many people getting killed, and you have to wonder forever what it was. That's crazy. And the second one, I'll just go ahead and ask it and get off, is thorium. You mentioned thorium, but I forgot what you said about it, or I didn't hear it or something.
Thorium. Is that for me?
Uh-huh. You mentioned
is that for me?
TH.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned T-H-O-R-I-U-M. Okay.
Yeah, I mentioned thorium because it was being gathered by the Japanese as part of a possible bomb. I don't know if they used the thorium or not, but they certainly were digging it up and that kind of thing. So that's how I mentioned it.
Oh, well, maybe Dr. Kelly still is, because I was wondering what they actually do use it for. It's radiation, right? Radioactive. So. But I read it wasn't good enough for that. So, well, anyway, I'll let you go. Maybe other people have more to say. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. Okay, I don't think we have any other callers. Okay.
All right, I can go on a little bit.
Sure, yes.
Here, I think I left off where they were, the Russians took these engineers and scientists and tortured them, and for 2 years they reaped the. There are reports of Russian submarines coming into Konan, and there would be all this fire and very interesting. They were picking something up during that time, and you know when the Korean War began. I found, and I've been told about, numerous reports of actually bombers targeting, quote, atomic plants in Korea. These would have been in the Konan area, which was the main area where they are said to have had it. And even so far as, I don't know how much you know about the audience knows about the Korean War, but as we were coming up into North Korea before it had been, before the war ended, at Hungnam, Hanson Baldwin is a New York Times, famous New York Times writer, and he writes a story that he went in with these troops who were looking for the atomic works in Konan, and that he found it. He says he encountered these huge works. So, and that's not the only time the New York Times would collect that. We know today the New York Times is just has its own agenda now and isn't like it was then. But in 1946, they pretty much did a pretty good job. By the way, myself, I worked for the New York Times as a stringer, which means in an area that that they needed someone in there. So I know a little bit about that. That's my journalistic background. But so during the war, this area that was identified in all of these CIA top secret documents that I found was actually bombed, and they blew it to smithereens. So I don't know what happened there, but it didn't matter. The North Koreans, when they took it over, they really reaped a lot of good stuff in the sense of the network that had already been built by the Japanese, the electrical grid, number one, the mines that were there, where they were mining the atomic, uranium and so on, and the underground places, and they built there the first area that North Korea began to build its nuclear program, and this is little known. Because, as I said, we really didn't have the good idea about it, was the Konan area, the Hungnam area. We don't really, when you look for documents, for instance, on the Internet, you'll go back to about 1956, and that's when they say they started their program, and it'll be around Konan. But it was really started during World War II. We didn't realize this. It was so secret that we didn't get into it, and now we're trying to fill in the holes.
Wow. In your book, you mentioned Unit 731 a couple of times.
Yes. that is not part of my story, but that unit was in Manchuria. And, the Japanese, when they went into China and Manchuria in particular, they were ruthless, and there were terrible things they did. And there is this unit which was supposedly, and probably very much so, doing experiments on especially Asians, but also even so much so as American POWs that might have been unlucky enough to be captured in that area. And the essence of that was that their doctors, for some hideous reason, did not want to give these people, when they cut their arms off or blew up grenades and near, any kind of anesthesia, because they felt that would taint the data. So they would tie a guy up and then blow a grenade next to him, or do an operation on someone without anesthesia and take out organs from his body. You can imagine. I mean, this is stuff I don't even like to talk about. They did that, a lot of this was kept quiet because there was this alliance between us and the Japanese after the war. The big enemy was Russia, and we needed Japan's help in keeping our bases and being our ally as we fought the Russians. And so all of this stuff was... Now, those experiments in Asia did get, there have been books written about them, but they're not as kept secret as Japan's attempt to make an atomic bomb, which is the one that I talk about.
Mm-hmm. I recently read a book titled Poisoner in Chief, and it's about the CIA search for mind control and all of the people that our CIA used and gave and drugged, and it's unbelievable what our CIA has been involved
with. I'm aware of that, and I've done work on that, and it's true. When this, especially the mind things, you know, what LSD and that kind of stuff. But the, I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, when you, a government is going to do that. The less government is better government. But when you have a national government and you have a, you know, war is hell, and it brings out all this horror.
Yes, I don't believe that. That we were put on the earth to kill each other. you did mention 731 and the terrible things that that occurred, but the soldiers that the U.S. sends out to kill others, to Japan or wherever, they're sort of mentally geared to be just as cruel as you depict in your book, as the Japanese were. Some of the things that, well, for instance, some of the Americans would cut off a guy's head, a Japanese head, boil it, and send it home for a souvenir.
Terrible. My feeling is, first of all, war is hell. You get people into war, and they're going to do things that are horrible. War is
absolutely
hell. It's something terrible.
It is.
I don't think we did it in any great degree. It did happen, not as much as the Japanese did. It's a difference in their outlook on life. They considered battle a glorious thing. We didn't do that. And therefore they would, anyone who shook from it would do some nasty things. But you know, there are atrocities in all wars. I personally look at the government for that, and we were attacked in by the Japanese, so you know we hit them back, and you do that, you're going to get that. If you start a war since Japan. Since World War II, we've gone into areas, and we've just been there for really no good reason. Not all the times, but some of the times. And the less war we have, the less atrocity we're going to have. But humans are humans. They are not Jesus. They are not God, who would presumably do only good things to us. But it's going to happen. Stay out of war. But sometimes somebody wants you to go to war. If they hit you, you've got to hit them back.
Hmm. Well, I think there's always reasons for war, and I've read a lot about Japan. I've read the C. Graves books, which are very interesting, and I don't know why I am attracted to war, because it's a hideous, horrible, horrible subject, and I don't understand why it's a crime if I went next door and shot my neighbor, I would be arrested for murder. But if the government sends you to kill strangers in a strange land, then you're a hero, and I don't see it as being different. I just don't think we should be killing each other.
Intention? And you take a soldier, he's put into that. He's defending his country. I'm not excusing any bad behavior, but To me, there's a great difference between defending your country and going next door and murdering your neighbor. That's a purely personal thing to gain something. No, I don't see the same. I certainly agree with you that war is terrible and we shouldn't do it unless we have to. You can't just let people come in and kill you. You have to defend yourself. Defending yourself is different than murder. That's my opinion.
Okay. All righty, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're a real trooper.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After about a month of Extendovite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor. I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, this is amazing. Bilberry extract is got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight. And I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out the kosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
We are back with our guest, Robert K. Wilcox. You are a real trooper. A lot of people would get totally worn out with 3 hours of of divulging a bunch of information. So I must say you're a real trooper. And you also have a very good phone connection. It's been very clear. And so you're on a landline, right?
That's good. That's good. Well, I guess we don't have much time left, do
we? We do have another caller. Do you want to take another caller?
Sure.
Okay, let's take James. Is it James in James in
Vancouver? Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, hi.
I think Yeah, hi. I spent 28 years in Taiwan, and I did a lot of walking around there. And I can attest to the fact of the sophistication of the Japanese infrastructure. We're in Taiwan from the latter part of the 19th century until 1945.
Yeah.
The Japanese were very advanced. I had friends who fought the Japanese in Burma. And he was complaining that his rifle, which had been designed in Canada by a Canadian engineer, was useless, and that the Japanese had better equipment. They had better rifles. They had a lot of things that were better than Allied troops. And it doesn't surprise me about the nuclear program, because it was a Japanese physicist that actually was first to postulate the Maison theory of the attraction between nuclei and another. That was Kawa, I believe. So when it comes to war, I did a master's degree in international relations and strategic studies. And wars are, as you say, they're hell. But it's interesting that wars are actually created as well. Countries have been doing that. Nations have been doing that. And one of the books I'm looking at right now is Thucydides, the Peloponnesian War, and also Machiavelli. So wars are actually created by human beings, and of course they create them, and then people go out and fight them. And that was my observation.
We are out of time, so I'm going to have to cut you loose. But thank you for your thoughts, James.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
That.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, we are out of time. And again, thank you for being on the program. And I love the book, Target Patton. What an awful thing. What an awful thing. And I, in the back of my mind, I think they probably knocked off his wife too.
It's a possibility, that's for sure.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Deanne. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Take care and have a good
it's
rest
been great.
Of the week.
Okay.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you next week.
If your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.